You know, this logo probably cost more than my whole movie. Hello, my name is Robert Rodriguez. I've heard some other directors' discs, and sometimes they run out of things to say, so I'm gonna try and jam-pack this one for you, because I figured if you bought the disc, you're interested in low-budget filmmaking, so this isn't necessarily designed to be listened to in one sitting. So I apologize if at times you need to rewind to figure out what I'm talking about, or even shut the disc off due to information overload, but I'm gonna give you just about everything you could possibly ever want to know about the making of El Mariachi, and how to make a movie for less than $10,000, so I hope you enjoy it. Let's just jump right in. We shot this scene in a real jail. It's on the edge of town. It's a real tiny place. This female guard right here works there, and so does the sergeant sitting there. He dresses a little more casual, but we figured as long as they're going to be sitting here all day, might as well put him in the movie. Save us the trouble of finding actors and dressing them up. This guy laying on the floor here is Roberto. He's Carlos's ranch hand. Carlos is the actor who plays the mariachi. And we use the ranch hand to push me in a wheelchair. This right here is a wheelchair shot. I'm sitting in the wheelchair with a camera in my hands, and Mission Impossible has pushed me along for the smooth dolly tracking shots. We use this technique a few times in the movie because it was the only dolly track we had. It's kind of makeshift. You just sit in the chair and push it along. We had borrowed the chair from the local hospital. And there's one scene later on where they lent us a chair but said, hurry up with it because the ambulance is coming. We need it back. Keep an eye on this ranch hand right there on the floor because he's going to show up a few times later in the movie. The problem we had is we kept running out of bad guys. The town was so small, as soon as we'd kill off a couple of bad guys, we'd have to go find new actors. So he's going to show up later on with a hat and sunglasses and a few other disguises. This guy is Reynold Martinez. He's a friend of ours who'd been in some of our other video action movies before. Here comes the continuity error. Watch her hair. See, it's pulled back in a bun and now it's... boop, sticking out. This is one of those things that happen when you shoot the same character on two different days because you don't pick up all your shots at one time. But this is one of those things where we knew that this movie was going to be cut so fast, no one was going to notice things. So you'll see that we take a lot of shortcuts. The shortcuts save a lot of money, but it also, we thought this movie was going to the Spanish home video market, so we didn't think anyone was going to see it. It made me realize all the things that you can get away with on a movie, because when I went back and saw it, I saw that a lot of the things that we did to save money actually worked, so... keep that in mind in a bigger budget movie. This is a scene we needed a lead in Tomoko, and a lot of this stuff is shot in slow motion in order to stretch out the screen time, because only one take on that one there, because otherwise I have to dry her off. We had to stretch out the screen time because in order to sell it to the Spanish video market, it had to be at least 90 minutes long. So my script was originally only 40 pages. I didn't know how long this movie was going to be, so the idea was just to shoot as much slow motion as we could to kind of slow it down, stretch it out, and then see how long the movie was. Hopefully it hit 90 minutes, and we'd have a better idea on how to make a movie when we did part two and then part three. Now, all these interiors were lit with practical light bulbs. Those are 250-watt light bulbs that are balanced for indoor film. We've got one on his face right here, and then one on the background, back behind him on his right. And that gave us good enough light reading inside that we could shoot with 320 ASA film. And we were able to shoot in the real jail cell. Also, this jail had some porcelain light sockets up on the ceiling. We just screw one of those 250-watt light bulbs into that socket, and it would give us the right color temperature and enough light to light those interior scenes in here. First thing people look for when they watch this movie is to see what a $7,000 movie looks like. And that's kind of a joke because there's not much money on the screen at all. Most of it went to buying the film. It was the developing and the transfer. There's only about $600 on the screen. Came down to things like the lights, which we bought brand new. There were two Acme reflector lights, the light bulbs, one actress, the squibs, the blanks, some fake blood. The rest was just stuff that we had borrowed or that we had already owned. And then just friends of ours, for instance. In this scene, we needed three well-dressed bad guys to come out of this truck. So the guy on the right is Mariachi's cousin. The guy in the middle is the cousin's chauffeur. And the guy on the left owns a local tortilla factory. Now, this presented a bit of a problem for us, because whenever we'd get a bad guy, they didn't always realize they were going to get killed off right away. So, for instance, in this scene, the guy on the right, Mariachi's cousin, he got all dressed up, brought his chauffeur, brought his truck. He thought he was going to last throughout the whole movie. He'd already told all his friends he was going to be in the film. So he was lobbying with the mariachi to stay in the movie a little longer, but, you know, I had to tell him, it's in the script, you die, so we killed him. Now, for these close-ups of the money, the mariachi and I, he was my co-producer, We had to borrow the money from the actors because we never had any. It wasn't too embarrassing because it let the cast know that we just didn't have any money, and so they never asked us for anything. Now, the biggest problem we had in these action scenes were the guns. We borrowed the guns from the cops, so they were real guns, but what happens when you put a blank in a real gun is that the blank jams, so it wouldn't repeat fire, it wouldn't even work as a semi-automatic. As soon as it would fire one time, we'd have to turn off the camera, unjam the gun, and put a new blank in. So these scenes are kind of wimpy. You're gonna watch up here. It's gonna look like it's repeat firing, but actually, I got three different angles of the barrel firing one time, and I would just repeat the frames of the barrel blast twice, cut away to someone getting shot, come back to another angle of the barrel blasting, repeat that twice, and would cut to the bad guy falling down dead, and then with a sound effect running over the cuts, it would give it the sound and the appearance that he had a repeat firing machine gun when actually it was all done in the editing. Now, I was too cheap to buy a real tripod, so what I used was a still camera stand. Now, it only went up to a certain height, but it made all these guys look huge. I mean, Asul here, he's 19 years old, studying to be a doctor. I mean, the guy looks like he's pushing 40. All these guys look nice and tall because the camera stand was kind of flimsy. I opted to shoot a lot of the movie handheld because the camera was so the stand was so flimsy. I couldn't do a lot of panning shots. There was no fluid tripod head. So it was kind of makeshift, but then, you know, everyone looks tall. The wheelchair also, when I'm sitting in the wheelchair, camera's aimed up at them so they look tall. Now for this jail scene, we needed a couple of empty jail cells. So the guard said, sure, we'll move the prisoners, and they packed them all into one of the cells off on the right. Now, one of the prisoners was being a little rowdy, but I told the guards it was all right, because we weren't shooting synchronized sound anyway. They took him out of our way and took him outside, and they were watching him, and he escaped. I caught him about an hour later, and they brought him back, asked him why he left, and then slapped him around pretty good. But overall, we had a lot of fun shooting this scene. Los Hooligans production, that refers to a comic strip I had for 3 years back in college called Los Hooligans. It was based on my family, and it was a popular strip, so when I made my production company, I wanted it to have the same name so fans of the comic strip would know it's the same guy making the movies. Now, drawing every day like that for 3 years, it helped me learn how to pre-visualize and put ideas together quickly. But the best experience I could have given myself was just making movies over the years. I think when I was 12 years old, my father bought one of the early video cameras that came out on the market. And being one in a family of 10 children, I had a lot of cast and crew around to make movies with. Or I would make movies with my friend Carlos, who ended up being the mariachi in this movie. I had met him in high school, in a boarding school. He lived in Mexico, and we would make little action movies down there during the summer vacations. And that's the best experience you could have, because having to shoot on video and edit on video, it was an easy way to get an experience. We made over 40 short films over the years. I mean, on video, short movies. I think just about every filmmaker has about 30 bad movies in them. The sooner you get them out, the better off you are. So it's better to shoot it on video, so you won't waste all your money and get that kind of experience before going on to film. That's the best way to learn, though. If you want to learn how to make movies, just make movies. Now here's a shortcut that worked. Originally, this guard was supposed to be male, and Masul was supposed to shoot his way out, but instead we just decided to pay her off, and it actually turns out to be funnier that way. Plus, with the budget we had, we figured, well, if he shoots the cop, that means the cops will be after him, which would be great because the bad guys and the cops would be looking for the mariachi, but, you know, we couldn't afford that. So it was just cheaper to pay her off and let him just walk out and go on his way. Now here comes Asul's truck. This truck is actually the mariachi's truck. I mean, this was our production vehicle. We have our equipment in the back. In fact, one of the guys wasn't showing up, so that guy driving is actually the mariachi in disguise. He's got his sunglasses on and his baseball cap. And this is Asul's brother. So we gotta cast him as one of the bad guys. Now look at this guitar case fiasco. I was so cheap. Here's a guitar case that has the real guitar. And we'll cut to another case that has the weapons in it. This is a heavier wooden case, but the top of it was wood colored. We're too cheap to buy black paint, so you see how it cuts away before you see the top of it. We didn't even bother painting the top lid. We're just too cheap to do anything in this movie. I really should have had another case that was heavier. But you don't make a $7,000 movie by being extravagant, so I had to cut back on everything. Which is not so bad, because when you don't have a lot of money, you have to figure out your problems creatively, which can make your movie better. And when you make a movie like Mariachi, you figure out what you can really get away with. Helps you on bigger budget movies. That guy there in the middle with the hat on, That's the dude that was sleeping, the ranch hand, Mission Impossible, who was sleeping on the floor in the earlier scene. He wears his hat all the time because he's losing his hair. He's going to pop in a couple more times in the movie, so we'll keep an eye out for him. There's that cheap cardboard guitar case again. Too cheap to get a real one. For this scene, the mariachi found a turtle. And it was a desert turtle, so he's trying to get to the road, the edge of the road. So he's a one-take turtle. Mariachi would plop him down in the middle of the road, run to his mark, and then as they walked, they would meet up. The turtle every time would close up in his shell, and then continue on walking, trying to get to the edge of the road to get away from us. So this was something we just found and put in the movie and ended up referring to later on in the narration, which we wrote after the movie was edited. Now this is my crane shot. I'm sitting on top of a ladder. You can see the camera's kind of shaking because I'm hand-holding it, and it's the wind's kind of blowing around. It gives a little production value, and some people actually thought we had a moving crane because they couldn't quite remember that it was a static shot. Now, this is a temporary setup here. These guys travel from town to town selling coconut water. We saw them and decided Mariachi's thirsty. Let's have him stop by, order a coconut, and drink that before he goes into the town. What we did, we filmed it, and as we drove away after shooting it, I realized the mariachi, we never showed him paying the guy. And I got upset at the mariachi because this ended up happening in several scenes. He'd buy a drink and forget to pay for it. So I said, oh, forget it. We're not going to go, but I'm not going to waste film reshooting you, you know, paying the guy. So we'll just refer to it here in the narration. He says free coconuts. So I was beginning to like this city. Make it sound like it's a lucky city or something. Since then, a few people have said they've gone to the town and couldn't find the free coconuts. And, well, that's just a movie myth. Don't go looking for it because it ain't there. All this stuff with the boots and him washing his face and all that, this was stuff that we shot because it was a cloudy day, and I was afraid that none of this stuff was going to match. I didn't want to shoot any action because everything else we'd been shooting up till now and everything we would be shooting would be out in the bright sun. That's a bunch of horseshit. Everything, no one even notices. I mean, we put this in and you can't even tell that it's cloudy. And I mean, if you look real close, but the movie goes so quickly, and you're usually listening to what he's saying, and you're, you know, soaking up the scenery that you don't even notice that the thing is overcast and that it doesn't match. You know, a lot of time can be wasted by being a little too picky about stuff that doesn't really matter. I figure if someone notices, that means we've lost them and the movie sucks anyway, so they might as well just keep going. And it was really easy shooting this stuff without a crew because, I mean, look at it. It's almost like documentary footage. I mean, this guy's walking into town. He's running. You don't really need more than one person there directing and operating the camera. If you don't have a crew, you can't afford to bring people around and feed them and keep them interested. Just get rid of them. It's easier just to do it yourself. For this scene here, though, I needed an extra person because I was going to do a point-of-view shot of the mariachi. And I was in a wheelchair, and the mariachi was pushing me. I noticed the floor is tiled, so the camera would bounce around too much. So I had him just push me faster, and I shot it in slow motion. That gave it an eerie look, and it also smoothed out those bumps. We shot this whole sequence here, starting from when the mariachi comes in to when Azul kills everyone and leaves in one 10-hour day, mainly because a lot of the light was coming from the light fixtures. We just plugged in those practical light bulbs again. And then we just let sunlight stream in, even though it didn't match color temperature-wise. If you look, you can tell it doesn't really matter. I mean, you've got normal light on their faces indoors, the tungsten light, and then the sunlight streaming in. I didn't have filters on the window or any HMIs out there or anything. We just kind of had to shoot with what we had. And it worked out fine. I mean, the movie's cut very quickly, and you don't really get a chance to stare at one particular shot setup. So if you have a fast-moving picture like this, you can get away with a lot of these lighting shortcuts that would have taken forever to light. So we basically just screwed the light bulbs into the fans, and that lit up him. And then I would put the lights into another fan fixture and light the mariachi and shoot his scenes. And it gave me a pretty good light reading in there. It was sufficient light to get this shot. This is the first scene I actually wrote, where the mariachi comes in looking for work. So we needed to find a keyboard and a keyboard player. This was the only guy in town we could find who had a keyboard, so that's the way to get cast in the movie. He said if you own any kind of prop or production value, you'll instantly be put in the film because, you know, we need your props. So he came in, brought his keyboard. We grabbed this sombrero from a local souvenir shop, put it on his head, and this was near the end of a roll of film. It was always a big deal to have to change the rolls because I'd have to go back to the mariachi's house and change them. So I went ahead and decided to shoot this scene at 16 frames per second in order to save film, which gives it this sped up look. And also because a lot of the music in these straight to Spanish home video movies, the music throughout the movie sounds like this keyboard. So I wanted the audience to know, especially our target audience, that this was supposed to be a joke. So we shot it for those two reasons. One, to make it look kind of funny for them, and then also because I didn't want to run out of film. And sure enough, they ran out of film right as this guy sat down. So I would have had to go back and change rolls mid-setup just before lunch, had I not shot at 16 frames per second. This bartender is really good. He's actually the closest thing we have to professional actor, since he's a news anchor on the local news show. Him and one other guy who you'll see later as the hotel clerk are the news anchors, and they're very critical against things that go on in the town. So much so that they were the first guys that we cast in the movie because we wanted them on our side from the beginning. Sure enough, every night they'd talk about our movie, and they'd talk about it in a positive light. That bartender's the news anchor, but these other guys, the bad guys sitting around the table, they're the real bartenders. These guys right here, they work in this bar. We came in to check out the location, and they were working there, so we told them to come in the next morning. We put them in the movie as the bad guys. Now, we're able to just go around and film these people because Carlos the Mariachi is from this town. This is his town that he was born and raised in. So we could get the cooperation fairly easily. Here comes Dr. Azul. He's going to come in and shoot everybody. Now, there's a lot of shots in this whole sequence, but it was easy to catch them. We got them all in one day because of the light. I think the main thing was that the lighting was very simple setup. They got the light streaming in through the windows, and then the little light bulbs on the other side. And even though they don't match, they're not... You notice the left side of his face is red and the right side is blue. And no one really cares. I mean, it goes by so quickly, you don't really have time to see that you have mismatched lighting here, mixed lighting, even though it's a color film. This is when we did our first squib effects. Our squibs were bought from Los Angeles. We had a special effects guy who was supposed to come down and do the effects for us, but his movie went over schedule. So he told us where to order them from, and he told us how to do it. What we did is we rigged... You notice everyone in this scene is going to get shot in the chest. So we put a weightlifting belt, a real thick leather belt around their chest, taped a squib that was inside of a condom full of fake blood that I made with Karo syrup and food coloring, put the squib inside the condom, turned it into a little balloon, taped it to the weightlifting belt, and then cut a hole in their shirt. The wires would trail out behind them, and the mariachi, who's not in the scene anymore, would be out just behind them with a D-cell battery. Tap the two wires to the battery, and it would the squib would explode. And we'd shoot it in slow motion, but you could see the condom and the blood and everything flying around. Like this right here, that's a piece of condom right there flying out. If you look real close, rewind, you see the yellow condom flying out over with blood on it. So it looks like flying flesh and looks pretty nice. You can see the weightlifting belt right under his shirt. But we're really pleased. It worked good. And we only used three squibs in that one thing. The gun blast, of course, like I said before, would jam. So I had to repeat the gun barrel blast. But the sound effect does a lot of your work for you. It makes it sound like he shot, 100 bullets through him when he only shot three. People ask if we made up all this as we went along. Little things like, the toilet paper in the guy's hand, the turtle we found on the road, and things like that. You'd make up when you get on the location and you find, different interesting things to do. But really, you really have to have things planned out in order to shoot a movie this quickly and for this low a budget. You can't have your actors hanging around forever waiting for you to come up with the next scene. You gotta have it all mapped out so that you have something to fall back on in case you don't come up with any ideas on location. So planning is very important. And having made so many movies before on home video, where I used to have to edit between two VCRs, it got me used to having to pre-visualize something before going out and shooting it and editing. That's very important. There's still directors these days who, everyone has their own style of working, but there's a lot of directors who will shoot and shoot and shoot and have the editor figure out what the movie is later on. If you don't have any money, you don't have that luxury. You really have to know what your movie is before you go out and shoot it, and shoot only the shots that you really need. We're able to grab this movie, this whole sequence especially, very quickly because I knew I only needed one take of him coming through the door because that's all I was going to show. I knew I only needed one take of this because it was going to be in close-up. I don't have another take of a master shot or anything. I cut it in my head first and scripted it very carefully and then shot only what I knew I was going to use as an editor in the final film. So that saves a lot of money because on a low budget like this, the more film you shoot, the more film you have to develop, the more film you have to buy. Just gets more expensive, and film is your most expensive thing. And we didn't have a real beeper for this scene, so that thing on his waist is a walkie-talkie, and the sound effect helps sell it. This guy here is a politician, local politician, Jaime de Hoyos. He plays Bigoton, the guy with a big mustache, sunglasses, Moco's right-hand man. This guy right here is the other newscaster I told you about. We wanted both those newscasters to say nice things about the movie, which is why their characters don't die. Because we knew the more positive we were with their characters, the more positive they'd be with our film. One of the few characters that don't die. That was became a status symbol around the movie. Bigoton here got to brag to all his other underlings because he wasn't going to die in the movie. Everyone else kind of checks out early on, even the good guys. Now, the mariachi knew the owner of this hotel, so they were very friendly about letting us film here. In fact, when we came in, the hotel clerks, the real ones, would go out to the back. They'd say, sure, you can film here, and they'd leave. And we were filming up here for the early part of the day, answering their telephones for them and everything, so we were kind of running the place as we shot. I noticed that everyone wears the same clothes through every scene. That's one of the decisions we made early on, is that since I didn't have a crew or anyone to help keep track of this sort of thing, it would be easier, especially since we were shooting so much out of sequence. If everyone just wore the same clothes every day, it made it a lot easier. Didn't have to think about what they were wearing from scene to scene, and saved a lot of time and a lot of headaches. And they all contributed their own wardrobe. Now, this exterior was shot in another location from the interior. This is actually the whorehouse district. This is the local brothel, and we used it for the dream sequences and then for this exterior. The interiors were shot for this bar at a friend of the mariachis and mine, Samuel's bar. It's called the Bar Amadeus. And the other bar where Rasul just shot everybody was the mariachi's sister's bar. So that's a way to add a lot of production value to your movie. Find out what it is you can borrow or that you own, and write that into the script. The bar that already had bottles and all the little knickknacks that make it look real, we didn't have to, you know, dress the set at all because it was already ready to go. Saves a lot of time and a lot of money. And this scene here, the lighting I like in this scene. Some people have commented, the lighting looks great. Who did the lighting? I tell them, I did the lighting. The lighting was easy. It was those two practical light bulbs, like I said. One on the face there with some diffusion over it, a 30-30 gauge diffusion sheet in front of that Acme light. The other light is on the back. You can see it behind the mariachi. Just open-faced. Aiming underneath one of the designs in the bar there. And it makes it look nice. The same lights on her that I use on him. So I shot him on a different day than her. Mariachi is always sitting there with me, so she has him to look at. But he was looking at nobody. He's looking like at a bottle cap that we strung up. So the way we had to shoot this thing was the mariachi, since he was, we were making this movie together, I could shoot him at any time. But people like the girl or the other actors, we had to shoot them fairly quickly and get them home because they all had their own jobs and things to do, so we couldn't waste their time. A lot of low-budget movies, you hear about the actors hanging around for hours and hours because, the director and the crew, they don't have their act together, but we couldn't do that on this one, so we weren't paying anybody. We needed them to show up for the movie. They could just easily not show up anymore. So we'd shoot these other people all at one time. This hotel clerk, we shot all his scenes, that previous scene he was in and this one. I'd just shoot all his close-ups and then send him home, and we'd never need him again. All these other shots of the mariachi I could get on any other day. It didn't matter. He wasn't as important because I always knew he was going to be around me. So whenever we couldn't find any actors to film because of their schedules, I would just go shoot all the mariachi shots. And they would match in just fine. Now, the performances on these actors, these guys I never really acted before, but I think I got good performances out of them, mainly because this was another benefit of not having a film crew. There was no crew standing around. It was just me, the camera, and then those actors, one or two, whoever was in the frame. So they gave very natural performances because they didn't feel like they were putting on a show. Now this guy right here, we sped him up. I had originally intended just to dolly in on him very quickly, but it would have taken too long, so I just sped it up, and it ended up playing a little funnier. This is one of those nice natural locations we found that we just loved. So the back of this hotel looks like one of those Escher drawings, and I try to get a nice wide shot and just let it linger because it looks like a maze. And we try to include a lot of natural locations. This is something that wasn't written in the script originally because I hadn't seen this particular location yet, but I tried to use it as much as I could and have them run all around. This hotel room is like that. There's no door handle on the door. I just put one of those practical light bulbs, those 250-watt bulbs, in the socket right there, and it gave it plenty of light, and it was color balanced. This thing on the wall is a decoration you see in a lot of, Spanish homes. And my grandmother had one in her wall, and I always wondered what it was. It's this cross swords and a ball and chain, and whenever someone of any kind of Mexican heritage watches this movie, they say, my grandmother has one of those in her house. I say, yeah, mine does too. So I thought we'd just include it in the movie and have him use it in a nice action scene, grab the ball and chain, swing it around. Now, these dream sequences were supposed to be premonitions into what he was going to become, and I had roughly sketched out what was going to happen. But like this freestanding door that we found, it's a building completely blown away, and the door stood there, and it still worked. We were just driving by one, and we saw it, and we said, let's include it in the dream scene. So we put it in. And the way I shot these scenes, this first one I sketched out a little more than the others. I was really just grabbing random shots because what had happened was the camera we had borrowed was kind of faulty. You put in a 400-foot roll of film and it would only register as 350. So there's like phantom 50 feet left somewhere. So when the counter read zero, I knew I had about 50 feet, maybe less, of film, and I didn't want to film anything too important. So what I would do is at the end of each roll, when the counter read zero, I would go and I would shoot dream sequence stuff. And so all these images were collected in a somewhat random and subconscious manner, almost like a real dream. Here comes my cameo right there. Now this next wave of bad guys, you notice they're not dressed in suits. Why is that? You know, what happened to the suits? I thought these guys were dressed in suits. But like I said, we took what we got. These guys had any suits. So the wardrobe, as you see, starts deteriorating as we get down into the movie. But at least these guys are big. By the end of the movie, you'll see what kind of guys we had left. After we kill all these bad guys, all we had left in the town were these little kids. And you'll see in the last scene, the bad guy Mauricio Moco is surrounded by a bunch of little kids. All these scenes, we shot the bad guys one day. You know, here comes one of my Steadicam shots. Look at that. Steady legs, actually. The wide-angle lens that I had on this camera was so wide that it made a lot of these moving shots really smooth. And the best thing about it was that it was focused from the lens to infinity, so I didn't have to even focus any of these. I just had to aim it in the general direction, and you'd catch a lot of the action. So people say, how come you use your wide-angle lens so much? It's like, man, it was the easiest way to shoot this movie. I couldn't imagine having to focus a lot of these kind of shots. When I'm running down the stairs, I'd be falling all over the place. Now, this was completely shot out of sequence. All of this was shot on different days. The bad guys on one day, the mariachi on another. And one person asked me at one of the festivals, how much money did y'all spend on gas? I thought, gas? Thinking about it, I thought, maybe looking at this movie, you might think we're all over the place. But look right behind him on the left there. That's the hotel. He just ran away from the hotel, didn't he? Well, that's because we're shooting everything on the same two blocks. We're running around in circles. If you were to rewind that and look right off to the left of him, there, right behind him, was the hotel that he just supposedly ran away from. All this is on the same two blocks. A lot of this action, because Carlos the Mariachi's house is right here in the middle of this downtown area. So we would just film right outside his house because it was just easier. Now, if you were from this town, you would pick that up, that we're running in circles, but general audience doesn't really see something like this because it's cut so quickly. You can get away with a lot, and that's why this movie was good to do for me, to figure out what you can get away with. Now this scene, I shot the entire scene from two different angles, one close up there and one wide here, and I just cut back and forth to make it the action go faster, because I wanted him to come in, put the jacket on fast, and just fly out of the room. Look how fast he gets out the door. Boom, before you know it, he's out. This is where we're going to have the squibs on the wall. We used condoms full of dirt to make those little explosions, and the mariachi detonated him while his ranch hand dressed up as him to climb over the wall because we were short on help. This scene of him running down the hallway is done in the wheelchair. I'm in the wheelchair, and we barrel down that way, and it's just natural light coming in through the window. Now, this is the scene with the bus that the mariachi's cousin was lending us. We wrote it into the script because we knew we'd have access to it. Now, he descends this telephone wire. It's not really a telephone wire. We hooked up this cable from the telephone pole to the hotel. He descends on a pulley. If you were to rewind, you see him. This big pulley that he's riding that we got a local blacksmith to make us for about 12 or 15 bucks. Now, this was going to be our big stunt in the movie, so we took our time. We did it on one Saturday morning, just the part where he hits the bus alone. All this other stuff we shot on another day. And the mariachi wanted to do his own stunt because we didn't have a stuntman, and also because he was the best, most physically able to do it. We'd had him swing across without the bus there a few times to get a kind of practice run, and we noticed that it was a little too slow. So what we did was that I just sped up the camera, and I got all the way down the street on full zoom to make the bus look closer to him than it was. He swung across, actually kicked and cracked the windshield with his boot heel. The bus driver had a good time though, so he didn't charge us anything. For this scene coming up here where they're running, it's a side view of them. I was in the back of the production truck here, zoomed in, and on the bumpy road with a camera on zoom like this going this fast, it was very shaky. I had, if you can see me in the reflection there, I have all my weight down on that little camera stand trying to keep it smooth. And we just shoot one full take of them running the whole block, and then I would just grab the shots that were the best in focus and the most in frame and included those in the sequence. Now this sequence coming up here when he runs over the truck and all, that's all over the top anyway, but it would have come out much better had these guns been able to shoot rapid fire. The way it is, it's way too many cuts in it, because so you get a single fire shot there, you have to cut to that guy shooting once, cut to this guy shooting once, and this guy, and then have, you know, the sound effect kind of run over it, but it just looks really goofy and really stiff. If the guns were movie guns with that extra barrel inside to inject the blank, it could have done, you know, more rapid firing, and it would have looked a lot better. This way, it's just one of those things you had to try and fix in the editing, and it didn't really work. I was talking over the part where the guys got shot, but if you go back and look at that last guy who got shot, you see a big old hunk of condom hanging out of his shirt. It looks pretty funny. And this guy running right here, the mariachi was complaining that he didn't like, he was acting, you know, a little stiff. He didn't like the way he was acting. So I said, well, let's just, you know, let's just plug him right now and shoot him and get rid of him. And mariachi didn't like his fall either, so he told us we never put him in another movie again. But no, all these guys are just friends of ours. The problem was we picked the biggest guys first and ended up, you know, killing them all off before the first 30 minutes. So as you'll see later on in the movie, we're just, the well starts running dry as far as bad guys. We started running out of guys. Back with him coming to the bar. Now you watch those two lights again. The only problem with using two lights like this is that you don't have enough light to light any other characters except the one that you're shooting, so all these bar scenes are empty. There's no one else ever in the bar unless they're in a single shot. Like I said, I used the same lights on her that I used on him. We just shot them on different days. I shot all her bar scenes on one day, and this mariachi, all his scenes here in this bar, we shot on the same night. It's about 3 o'clock in the morning right now. It's the last night we could possibly shoot because the next day we had to give our camera back. So he looks a little sleepy because we've been shooting all day and it's the last day of filming. It was real important to make sure that these actors, the other actors, Carlos, the mariachi, I could film any time, but these other actors like the girl, we had to make sure that they could come in, do their lines and their shots very quickly and then leave again so they could go back to work, and also so I wouldn't have to feed them. So they'd come in the morning after breakfast, I shoot their scenes before afternoon, send them away for lunch, and then not call them back for a few days. That way they didn't feel like they're really dedicating a lot of time to this movie. Also, I didn't show them the script, especially her. She was very sharp with this stuff anyway. I didn't want them rehearsing something they're only going to have one take at anyway. And I wanted to kind of keep it spontaneous. So what I did was I'd have them come in, I'd feed them a few lines at a time, like she could handle about 4 or 5 lines at once. We'd film her lines in close-up, and then forget the lines and go on to the next lines. That way they didn't feel like they had to work, really rehearse something. If they wanted to be actors, that would have been different, but they weren't even interested in acting. None of them were. The mariachi is the only one that wants to go on and act, and also Moco. But to give them the script beforehand would have meant for them to rehearse, for them to work, and then they would have wanted to be, they would have wanted to be paid after that. So we wanted to make sure they didn't want that. Make it kind of fun and make it easy. I'd bring them in, concentrate only on that one person. And like I said, since there was no crew, they're really relaxed. She would just give me a very natural performance, even though, you know, she had never acted before. We shot at this part with a slap with them both together, but I'm surprised a lot of this cuts together because it was shot so far out of sequence. But when you don't have, I think I heard on one of Martin Scorsese's discs that shooting a movie is a horrible experience because all day long you have people asking you questions all day long. You know, what do you want to eat? What color should this be? I didn't have that problem on this movie because I didn't have a crew. So no one ever asked me anything, so I could keep everything from the few costume changes we did have on the girl to what I had shot a week before in these scenes, all in my short-term memory span, because no one ever asked me any questions to kind of throw me off. I'm sure that if I've had just someone ask me just one question, I would have just completely lost it. This was the second scene that we had shot after the jail scene. This is the second scene we shot in the movie, because it was an easy scene, and I kind of like doing easy scenes first, the first couple days of shooting. I hear that some filmmakers like to tackle the more difficult scenes first, but for me, it's much easier to get the confidence level up, to kind of get back into the groove of making a movie by taking on the easy stuff for a few days. And especially since I was doing everything, I mean, to write, to record it, to operate the camera, you know, to load the film, do the light, direct the actors. I really wanted to kind of ease into the whole thing. And this kind of brought my confidence level up before we started hitting the action scenes. That bathtub, you see, is our lucky bathtub. The mariachi actually worked on this movie by Alfonso Arau called Like Water for Chocolate, Como Agua para Chocolate. The bathtub is from his movie. They had shot in the same town where we shot, and we needed a freestanding bathtub for the movie, so I told the mariachi to go find me one. He said that there weren't any in town. He knows because on Like Water for Chocolate, they had to go all the way to San Antonio to get this tub. So I told him, why don't you borrow it from Alfonso? And so Alfonso Arau, that's why his name is in the ending credits, lent us his bathtub, and we say that this is our lucky bathtub because both our movies went on to go to the same festivals together and find some success. Now this scene, you notice that red light on the back of his head there on the left. This is the same lighting setup that I had before with the mariachi, except instead of having one light on the background, I just moved it to the back of this guy's head and put a red gel on it. The red is also cast on her because I want to give the bad guy just that red look behind him. Now, I was really trying to save film on all these shots, so I would cut in the camera. As soon as they'd finish a line, I would cut. So if you watch closely, right here coming up, a flash frame. Right there, the beginning of a flash frame on him there at the end of his shot. Because what I would do is I would film a line, and right after I thought I wouldn't need any more, I would cut. I didn't want to shoot a lot of extra stuff before or after a line if I didn't think I was going to use it in editing. And I got a little too, money-saving sometimes, and shot myself into a hole where I couldn't make a shot any longer, even if I wanted to. So a lot of the reason why this movie is so fast-paced is a lot of my original footage is very, very short. There's not much room to make it any longer. And here's Peter again. I met Peter in the medical research hospital where they test pharmaceuticals on healthy young men. This was back in Austin, Texas. We were both in there for different reasons. I was trying to get a quiet place to go write my script and earn some money for the movie, and he was making some money for school. And so it sounds horrible, but you actually make a good chunk of money in there. They pay about $100 a day. I went in, to make the extra money. We made $3,000 that month. But the deal is you can't leave, you're locked in there. The whole idea is they're paying you for your inconvenience. So we watched a lot of movies, we talked about the movie, and everyone in there has their big dreams of what they're going to do when they get their money. No one believed us that we were going to go make this film. I met him in there and I cast him as a bad guy after seeing him act rather intensely with some of the other lab rats. I figured he'd be my best bad guy. And we never thought that this movie would go on to do what it did for us. And it's been a real trip, from selling our bodies to science to toasting our success at the Sundance Film Festival after we won the Audience Award for the best drama against movies that cost much more money, had bigger stars, and that, were in English. So he'll be the first to admit that it's been a real surprise for us all. And that guy cleaning the glasses there, we shot all his scenes at once. You notice that he's never in a shot with anybody else, because in about 15 minutes, we shot all his scenes and kind of dispersed them throughout the movie. Whenever someone needed to look away at someone and say something, like right now, she'll turn and say, "I'll be right back." We just cut to him cleaning and chewing gum at the same time, and that was our cutaway. Made the bar look populated. And this was a fun scene because this was our Hitchcock scene. They got the guy in the tub, got the lady with a knife. And, I grab all these shots, but the most fun is cutting it all together later. I think that's, the part I like the best about the movie making is the editing. Because that's when you finally piece it all together and finally see what it was you wrote, several months earlier in a form that's the most satisfying. Because when you're filming, you really don't feel like you're ever getting what you want. You're shooting the shots, it doesn't look like anything because it's just pieces of a jigsaw puzzle. It's not until you really edit it together that you start finally seeing what you wrote. And this was great. We used all the shots that I filmed, close-ups, inserts, the drop of the bottle, and just cut it all together. We shot very quickly. We had just one light on them both there, and natural sunlight coming in off from the left. Again, since this is tungsten light on them, it's rendering normal, but the sunlight is coming in blue, so I just let it run blue. I didn't care that we were mixing the lights. Close-ups of the dog were fun. He's just sitting around, and we got all those cutaways, ended up using all the cutaways we have of the dog. We had to make a few compromises. For instance, this isn't exactly how I envisioned her room. This is upstairs in the mariachi's house. So it has the 60s furniture in it. It's got the strange green walls and the cold floor. But so the tub was the main prop here. We just filled it up with water and put... we didn't have any bubble bath, and we were too cheap to go buy some, so we just got some Ivory dishwashing soap and poured it in there, kind of made my actor all pruny. He was in there about 2.5 hours. But for a scene like this, you just gotta make sure you have it scripted and you know what's going on, and then you can just grab all kinds of shots, put it in. I pretty much used everything we shot, all the close-ups, especially like here in the singing section. My actor can't sing or play the guitar, so what we did was a local musician sang and played for him, and then I played it back on a tape recorder and had the mariachi try to sync it up as best it could. Whenever his mouth did sync up right, we showed it. When it didn't, I'd cut either to the girl there, or to his hand action, or to the dog. And it was pretty convincing, I think. Good enough, considering. This was supposed to be a knife originally in the script. We went to go look for a prop knife. All we could find was this interesting letter opener, because we needed something dull, since she was going to have it up against his throat. So we went ahead and wrote it into the script as being a letter opener, because we figured everyone would know it's a letter opener just looking at it. It doesn't look like a knife. If you notice, I'm completely off axis in this whole sequence. She's looking off to the right, and then he's also looking off to the right, so it's a little bit screwed up, but I get back on axis about when it's a little too late, a few shots later. Those shots of the dog were easy. He's just kind of relaxing up there. I would just call his name, and he would move his eyebrows to see what I want. He wouldn't get up. You know, he was too lazy for that. That's really how he is. He's just really laid back. Oh, here we are, back on axis. He's really just laid back, and you call his name, he'll just look to see what you want, and then he'll go back to minding his own business. So we use that quite a bit whenever we needed a cutaway. Because the problem with my sound is that I shot silent. So I had to record all these lines after we'd finished the film takes. I had them all repeat their lines of dialogue. So I had to sync it all up by hand. So a lot of times the lines wouldn't match up. So where they didn't match up, I would cut away. That's why you have her saying half a line and it cuts to him right there. Because she was out of sync during that part. So it was the sync that dictated where all the cuts went. So at the festivals, when people would say, "You have a very interesting cutting style. You cut your dialogue scenes like no editor would ever cut them," I'd just laugh and tell them, "I'm sorry, the reason I did that actually is because they were all out of sync. I really didn't have much choice. It was the only way, because I can't stand rubbery lips. And that's usually the quickest way you can see a low-budget movie is by bad sound job. So I wanted it to look perfect, even if I had to sync up each line by hand, which I did, and it took a long time. But, when you don't have any money and you really want to make a movie, you don't mind putting in those kind of hours and doing those obscene chores because you want to make a film and you don't mind putting in that kind of work. Now, this was one of the early scenes we shot because Asul had to go off to school, like I said. So this was shot in his bachelor pad above his parents' house. Now he wanted three girls in bed with him. He told me he would be in the movie only if he had three girls in bed with him. And I said, "Oh, come on, man, we're not making those kind of movies." And I thought about how much trouble we had just trying to find an actress for the lead. So I said, "Okay, well, if you can find three actresses, we'll put him in." So he found these three girls, and they all looked just like him. So I said, "This is great. We'll put him in, and we'll make him bodyguards. And then they're just going to be laying around. We'll give him guns. We'll give him something to do." And like I said, Peter, here in the pool, doesn't speak any Spanish. So we had the mariachi was right out of frame in a lot of these scenes in the water, holding up his lines for him to read off of. That's why we put sunglasses on him, so that you couldn't see that he was actually looking down at a script or looking down at lines. Can you believe that Asul here is studying to be a doctor? Dr. Asul. And this next shot, the mariachi standing right out of frame, holding up the lines for Moco to read. This is a good time to mention the dubbed version. On the other track, there's an English dub of the movie. Columbia released the movie theatrically subtitled. For the video release of the movie, they told me that 60% of the sales went to the dubbed versions rather than the subtitled versions. And I wanted people to see the movie one way or another, so I went ahead and supervised the English dub. I brought in a lot of the original actors, but the problem we had was with the dialogue. We had to change a lot of the lines to fit the labials and the Spanish lip movement, so a lot of the lines now sound really strange. Click over to the other track, and you can hear this scene in particular, and the ending scene. By the end, when everyone's yelling at the ranch, you know, it's all in close-up, it looks like a kung fu movie. Now watch this guitar case here. This is the wooden case I was talking about that were too cheap to paint the lid. Watch the lid right there, it's wood color. On the left there, that Playboy sign in the back, it's going to disappear because I just took it off even though it already shot it. Because I was tired of seeing all these American products that this guy had up on the wall. This was supposed to be Mexico and it looked too much like the United States. By the way, this English dub I recorded in Los Angeles and it cost more to do the English dub than it cost for me to shoot my entire film. One of the few costume changes of any of the characters, and that's Domino. She has a red dress on. She had three costume changes throughout the whole movie. No one else changed their costume. But just keeping track of hers was a real pain. I'm glad I had everyone else wear the same thing, because to have to be doing everything on the set and then trying to remember, what is she supposed to be wearing? Because we'd shot a lot of this out of sequence. This made me glad that I didn't have a costume change for anyone else. So if you're going to shoot a low-budget movie, you don't have a lot of money, your time, or a crew, that's one thing you can do, is have everyone wear the same clothes. And this music was performed by a local songwriter named Juan Suarez. He sang both the songs and did this guitar playing for us. I just played it back in a tape recorder and had the mariachi sync it up. For instance, this crowd scene right here, we shot at the bar because it was their one-year anniversary for being open. And they had a big party, so I went and I filmed the crowd and the crowd's reaction to a song that we hadn't taped yet. So I had imagined this was going to be a more lively song than the one that's in there. But at the end, we ended up, this was the last night of filming, also the scene right here. Mariachi is doing the slow ballad. So you see, when he finishes the ballad, the crowd reaction is a little strong when you take into consideration the song, type of song that he's playing. He's playing a slow ballad, and they get up and cheer as if he was Bruce Springsteen. So that's what happens when you shoot out a sequence and don't exactly have things lined up. If I had known this was going to be a ballad, I would have had them, you know, react a little bit differently at the end. The way it was, they get all carried away because they knew we were making a movie, and so it's kind of funny the way it is now. Now, his lip sync is pretty good right here, but it cuts away because he goes out of sync. He's pretty good synced this first few lines, but then after that, it's all over the place because the mariachi didn't have much time to practice the song. So all these shots of the girl, all these reactions, or because he's out of sync, and it only cuts back for the few times that he's in sync, like right there, one word, or two words there, then it cuts back, because it was just hard to keep all that stuff in sync without him knowing the song a little bit better. You see, the bar stools are up because this was a few days after that party, and we hadn't cleaned up the bar yet. There's like a balloon floating in the frame, and the owner of the bar, Samuel, is going to come in for his cameo right here. Since he gave us the bar and let us shoot there during the days, we stuck him in the movie. A tape recorder that I had, it was a Marantz tape recorder. It's just a regular cassette player, but it has a pitch control on it. It means you can change the pitch of whatever it is you're playing. The guy who actually sang this song has a much deeper voice than the mariachi. So what I did was I just, in playback, I changed the pitch. I pitched it up and made his voice a little bit higher to match more with the mariachi's talking voice. And, you know, just regular equipment, you can do a lot if you really milk it. This light on his face, the way I knew where to place the light is because the softer the light, the closer the light, the softer the light. So I had that light right out of frame, just so you couldn't see it. That's why the light in his eyes is so big, because it's right out of frame. And there's another light kicking on the back of his head. It's the same two lights over and over. But it gave it a nice look, and it was very quick to set up. That's the big thing. I've been on some student projects where, look at the audience, they're going crazy for them. I've been on some student project films where they have so many lights, they don't know what to do with them. You know, the big HMIs and all this. Here, we have just the open-faced bulbs coming in from the left. And it was enough light to make it a fast setup, and it lit it fine, and we could just keep moving, because you don't want to spend a whole lot of time lighting. At least not on a real low-budget movie like this, because then the actors are waiting forever, and they're going to want to get paid, you know. So by just keeping the light simple, which a lot of times you can overdo if you spend too much time on it, keeping the light really simple and keeping things dark just really worked for this movie. And you notice they're not in a shot together, these two, because once again, we had to film them on different days. She was sick, actually. We had to film three of her scenes all in a row and send her home quickly. So I had to kind of make the decision on what kind of shot I wanted, a medium shot or a close-up, and then stick with that decision. The shot of the dog asleep here, he just fell asleep on us while we were filming, so I grabbed the shot, not really knowing where I'd put it in it, and it fit in real good right there. This was a scene that these are the kind of scenes that I hated editing the most, because they were kind of not much happening, and they really didn't seem like they were working until I put the music on. It's a song my brother wrote that I taped in his apartment with a tape recorder and that same Radio Shack mic. Once the music was laid in, the scene worked, and now it's one of my favorites. But at the time when you're editing, you have the big chore of editing ahead of you. The most fun were editing the action sequences. Here comes another dream sequence. We're back in that whorehouse district. That's why it's all abandoned like that. Now this scene where he grabs the guitar case, you notice he won't pick it up by the handle, because the handle broke off in one of the earlier scenes, and we were too cheap to get it fixed, so this is near the end of the shoot. So we shot out a sequence. You'll see throughout the movie times when, there's my cameo right there under his arm again, you'll see times where he's holding the guitar by the side rather than the handle. For this shot here, I'm running at the door full speed with the camera actually on slow motion to smooth out the bumps. It almost looks like a Steadicam, but it's really just handheld with a wide-angle lens on slow motion to smooth out the bumps. Here, I woke him up early one morning because I wanted him to look like he was really waking up. That's why he's got the glazed eyes and that the sleepy bedhead, and you can almost see that pasty film on his skin. Now, for this scene, the light, once again, is right out of frame on his face, but that blue light coming in on the background is coming from a big window. That's the sunlight coming in, and it's rendering blue. I'll bring up the lighting every once in a while because it didn't take much to get it to look that way. For this scene, This is the big script screw-up. This is where I wasn't very careful laying out the script, and when you're on location filming, you don't have time to really go back and check out and make sure everything is logistical. Why is he putting the guitar case down there? Because originally in the script, she told him he should do that. Yet at this point in the story, she shouldn't know anything yet. She's about to go make a phone call that'll give her all the information. So I just cut out her lines, and now it just seems bizarre because it just looks like everyone's just looking at each other. And makes it a little more mysterious, but that's not exactly what I had in mind. It's just one of those things. I was watching it later on. I said, this is information she has that she shouldn't have until after she makes this call, and she's already talking like she knows everything. So it was, fortunately, it was something that I could fix and something that you wouldn't really notice. But that's why your script is your blueprint, and you got to really make sure it's right, because really, when we were filming, the only time I even looked at the script was to cross out what we had already shot and to go on to the next part. So you're really not, don't have time to fix things or to make sure things are right. You really got to make sure it's right before you go in, especially in a low-budget movie like this, because it can really cost you. This scene here I wrote to have as little dialogue as possible, because I was starting to realize I was going to have to sync all these lines up by hand, and it was getting to be a little much. So I try to do as many scenes like this where there's no talking and it's all visual. This is, again, natural lighting just coming through the windows right there. The reason I bring up the lighting so much is because I want people to realize that if just because you don't have a lot of equipment or lights or a lot of money, you can still make a good movie. Just using the few little things you have and using them well, really milking it. Because you can come up with something that looks really nice without having a lot of money. I mean, this doesn't cost anything to shoot in a situation like this, and you know, it looks fine. It's really what goes on in the scene rather than all the extra technical stuff, because you're forced to concentrate more on the story. Here's another spit-up shot. More on the story and the characters and the action rather than the technical things that most people don't even care about. I mean, the most technical movies coming out of Hollywood sometimes are terrible because they look great, but so does a 30-second commercial on TV. Everything looks great these days. You have a lot of money, you have no excuse for a movie looking bad. It's just the story and the characters that kind of gets lost in the mix. Now here the lighting's really bad in this one because this is the first bar scene I had shot. Masul was leaving for school, we shot all his scenes first. And the lighting here, I tried different lighting setups. Each time we shot in here, it's a different setup. Just so I could learn which was the best, which worked the best. Fortunately, this came later on in the movie, so you're already used to seeing some better examples of lighting. But this one just didn't work at all. Masul got to drink his own beer because this was all shot in one take. I knew we weren't going to have the continuity errors you see in some movies where one second the bottle's full, the next second it's half empty, then it's full again. We did all in one take, so we knew we weren't going to get him drunk, and he gets to drink a nice cold one. I think Kasul really liked doing this part. For this scene where he goes outside, this is one of those things I'm always amazed can cut together because it's at two different locations. Here's the whorehouse district as Kasul's coming out. This is across the street of Carlos's house, so this is in the middle of town. Cut back to him running across the street, and then this was a stock shot of him crossing. You can tell the lighting didn't match that we shot, you know, earlier in the week. Here's another of the interior scenes, again a different lighting setup. I was trying every different lighting setup I could think of just to kind of see what came out the best. I kept notes on what I had done so I could on the sequel, whenever we shot another movie, we're going to shoot it the same way. I would know how to light the interiors and get it to look the best. And for these action scenes out on the street, sometimes people at a film festival would ask me, you know, how did y'all film out in the streets like this with real guns like that one there and get away with it? And I told them, well, you know, I've been filming in this town for many years because my friend Carlos, who played the mariachi, is from this town. So, look at this guy with a bull's cap. That's what happens when you tell people to bring their own wardrobe. They'll bring anything. Later on, you'll see a bad guy with a t-shirt of The Cure. Well, anyways, when you shoot in a town like this, make sure you know somebody in the town, otherwise, you know, you'll get arrested and we'll never hear from you again. I look at this guy with the sunglasses. If he gets a wide shot there, then you're going to have a close-up, and then you're going to, you know, go back to a wide shot. It's going to vary. You're going to have a wide, medium, close-up, extreme close-up. Now, the way I did it, here's a wide again, was I did it all in one take. What I would do, here's a close-up, is that as he's saying his line, I would zoom in for a close-up or an extreme close-up like that one there, and then zoom back out in between each line. So in one take, you get all those various angles or compositions, and doing it all in one take to give the movie a feeling that we have more coverage than we actually did. So that's how you get five shots in one take, using the zoom lens. Now, the movie moves so quickly, I don't think most people don't usually comment that Azul should have been able to tell the difference from the weight of the guitar case with a guitar and the one with the weapons, but that's the nice thing about moving a movie rather quickly, is that you can kind of just forget a lot of this logistical stuff and hope people's eyes are glazed over by the mid-movie and they kind of miss the whole switch-off that never really happened on screen. And you can take a lot of shortcuts and trick people. I used to like magic tricks when I was a kid, and this is almost the same thing. You can just create illusion of a... Look at this guy, he doesn't know what's going on. I'm feeding him his direction as we shoot. So I tell him, look behind you, and then, you know, close the case up and start running. So these people all have confused looks on their faces because they didn't know what it was I was asking of them. We shot so completely out of sequence that I was just telling him who's here. Oh, there's a dolly shot with a wheelchair. That's when the ambulance was coming. And I would tell him, you know, look over here, run over there. These guys, I say, run after him. And, you know, they're completely confused, and it works for the movie because they're supposed to be confused. Now, we're so short on men. Look at this white truck driving away. You can tell by the big head driving that it's Azul. Yeah, he's helping us out all the time. That was his father's truck. This is some more shots down the middle of, this is the main road there in the town, Acuña. You've got all the flags and posters and banners, and it kind of looks like Chinatown. If you shoot with a telephoto lens, I had it on full zoom, kind of compacts everything and makes everything look really squished together. And the scene here in the dead end, this guy's about to shoot. Keep an eye on him. He's going to show up later on. He's one of the biggest guys we had in the movie. He's going to show up later on with his mustache shaved and a hat and sunglasses, because here he did. We lost another bad guy. We shot another bad guy. And we're really running out of guys, so we bring him back as another character later on. Now that squib that just went off, this first squib, we actually did two on him. The first squib didn't go off so good, so we did a second squib. But I didn't bother to change his shirt. It didn't matter that there was blood all over. If you went back and watched, you'd see that the blood was already on the shirt before he got detonated. This guy we rigged to blow up over his own truck. That's his own truck there. We had one squib in front and one squib on back and exploded him at the same time. That's my car right there making a cameo that he's climbing all over. Now this is a Friday afternoon, so all the tourists are coming over the border. So all these cars driving up are tourists who don't know what's going on. They see this mariachi in the middle of the road with a guitar case and a gun. They figure he's some disgruntled musician, or maybe this is just, you know, a day in the life of Mexico. Now this part where he walks towards the camera, you see it going in and out of focus coming up right here, because when someone's walking towards the camera like that, it's kind of hard to pull focus. But I didn't realize when you go to Hollywood, you've got an actual focus puller, someone who's standing there while you operate, focusing for you. I'm gonna get spoiled over there, I tell you. This movie was a lot of fun to make because, in a way, it was a pure filmmaking experience, because we had absolutely no illusions or any real hopes for this film beyond selling it to the Spanish home video market, where very few people would even see it. That's why we had to keep the budget so low, because we knew we couldn't sell it for very much. And since no one was going to ever rent an action film titled, basically, The Guitar Player, that's what the title translates to, a title that doesn't promise any action, we basically made this movie for ourselves, following every whim or doing anything that we wanted in the movie. It was great, you know, because there was never any money problems, because there was no money. There were never any complaints about the food by the crew, because, you know, there was no crew and there was no food. So it was just a win-win situation at the time. The idea was just to make the film to gain experience and then to sell it to the video markets, that we'd make back enough money to cover our investment and have some money left over to shoot a part two and a part three in order to gain more experience, because I figured that after three films with no crew, I'd be so much more experienced a filmmaker, I could then go to Hollywood and make bigger budget films and not fall on my face. So this movie wasn't even designed to be a demo tape. It was just a way to get some practice and to really just take as many shortcuts as we could to get it in under budget, have it be 90 minutes so we could sell it and go on. Here's a scene I had a problem with. You notice he's got all these scars on his back. This is another one of the dangers of shooting out of sequence, because I shot this scene before I shot the previous chase scene. So in the script, I had her cleaning this, you know, his wounds that he got in the previous chase scene. But actually, if you look at the chasing, there was no time. We didn't have much time to film the kind of elaborate chase that we wanted where he would get these wounds. So now it makes the audience wonder, hey, where did he get those things? Because all he did was jump into the back of a truck, and in the script he was supposed to do much more. He was supposed to get those scars from doing some other crazy stuff that we never had a chance to film. And so it's kind of out of place, but scar was just Karo syrup and food coloring that Carlos poured on his arm. And it looked kind of silly. It looked like it was just dripping off. And so when I tried to wipe it off, it made that rough, scraped look. All these cutaways, the cotton, the dog, the close-ups of the scar, I shot to cover for the moments when they went out of sync, because there was a lot of dialogue in this scene, and I just can't stand it when people's lips are out of sync. The lighting came out good today. Look at the light coming from that stained glass window. That's just the sunlight coming through. We've got this light on their face. Same two lights brought in real close, right out of camera range, and it looks real nice. That's why I like operating my own camera, because you really get to see what the movie's going to look like when you're looking through the lens like that. Here's a scene. That was Moko's idea to have that hat on, give himself a different look. Usually in a Hollywood movie, you know, you got the bad guy, he comes up, he admits to his boss that he did something wrong, and the boss usually shoots him. Well, we couldn't get rid of this bad guy, so we just had him, you know, light a match on him, use him as a matchbook, kind of degrade him a little, and send him on his way. We just had the matchbox right out of frame, and Moko would strike it against the matchbox, bring the match into frame. By the time the match actually in light ignited itself, it was in front of the actor's face and made it look like he brought it off his stubble. That sound effect was with a match coming right off the matchbox right in front of my Radio Shack mic. That was the sound effect we used there. It's usually the first thing you notice in a low-budget movie is the bad sound, because usually on a low-budget movie you can't afford to get good Foley work done. I didn't want to leave that up to Foley work, because I knew when I was editing this thing I didn't want to be in a room trying to record all the sound effects I needed, because then it would sound like it came from a room. So what I did was I went to all the trouble of, after shooting a scene silent, I would take the tape recorder out, have everyone repeat the actions, all the physical actions as well as the dialogue, tape it all up close, and have it all on tape, and later on, cut it all in, you know, by hand. And it took a long time, but you know, like I said, when you're working for yourself like this and you're trying to do some good work and teach yourself how to make a film, you don't mind doing that kind of thing, which no one Hollywood ever do. They'd rather just Foley it. Put it in the budget and Foley it. It's much easier, it takes much less time, but it costs money. This was an inexpensive alternative that cost time. So, you know, when you're broke and you're just starting out, you have plenty of time, so I certainly didn't mind. And it gave it a sound that you couldn't even get in a Foley room, a professional Foley room, because it was all taped on location. It had the right ambience. It just sounds a little more real. So I tried to use my original production effects as much as I could, and since I taped them so close up, that was a benefit of not having a sound camera. Since the camera was so noisy, I couldn't tape sound at the same time anyway. Plus, I didn't have a sound man. So once the camera was off, I would tape all the sound effects and bring the mic in as close as I wanted because the camera was off. If the camera was on, I'd have to keep the mic out of frame, and then, of course, the sound would have been horrible. But with the microphone up so close, you know, I got good enough sound quality, natural location sound, and it worked really good. It just took a while to cut in. I'm just glad that a lot of this original sound made it into the final mix. You know, the music, for instance. If you look at the opening credits, you'll see five different names under music, because I just used five different friends of mine who had never done soundtrack music before. I knew it would be too much for one person to do the whole soundtrack. So what I did was I got these five different people, two or three songs from each, and I just didn't show them the movie beforehand while they were composing the music. I would just have them construct a certain song. I would go in later on and match up the different songs to the different characters in order to get a different style for each scene. So I was able to get a good soundtrack very quickly because each composer only had to compose two or three songs each. This is Domino's last scene in this room. This was that same night that she was sick, so we filmed her very quickly and sent her on her way. So the mariachi here, when he's looking up at her, that's the ranch hand sitting next to her that he's looking at. So people ask, you know, why isn't there a love scene? And well, it would have been kind of difficult because they weren't in the same room together. And he's looking at his ranch hand. Poor guy. Here's the last dream sequence. This kid we just found, he was looking inside our camera and drinking our Gatorade. We shot all these scenes of him in about an hour and a half one day, and then sent him on his way. This music for this scene was done by Mark Trujillo. He's a friend of mine who is a comic strip artist. He's also a painter. He does dark paintings and he plays this really dark, bizarre music. He doesn't have much equipment. He does it all out of his closet with very minimal equipment, with a four-track tape recorder that he turns upside down and plays things backwards and comes up with this really strange sound. And this guy waking up here in front of the dog, I needed to shoot this scene kind of quickly. Domino had to go somewhere. And I just figured I'll just shoot it with a wide-angle lens, just get her lines and get the mariachi's reaction shots. There's another wad of money. The mariachi and I didn't have any money, of course. We had to borrow it from Domino. We were both surprised at how loaded she was. She had a lot of cash on her. It's not really a comic effect. I was just trying to get this thing out quickly and figured since he was just waking up and he was disoriented anyway, it wouldn't really matter if I shot it like that. Look how worn out the mariachi shirt is. At one of the festivals, one of the audience members yelled out, "Forget the guitar, buy a new shirt." That's one of the dangers of not being careful with the wardrobe. This was one of the last days of filming, but we should have kept it a little cleaner or they start noticing that it's the same clothes. Here's my reflection there on the ride. You can see me filming. I don't have a crew behind me. But I stand up, you're not supposed to do that. That flashes the film. This shot here coming up is a dolly shot in a wheelchair that we actually shot a week earlier when we had a real gun on hand. We went ahead and got some shots of this guy firing a real gun. And that's where this wardrobe comes in handy because it matched up with this, which we shot later where we didn't have a real gun. You can tell right there that's a water pistol. Rewind a little bit and you can see that that's a plastic gun with a little red dot in the middle of the barrel. So having them wear the same clothes came to an advantage because shooting one thing one week, we could actually use it later on and not have to go back and reshoot it. Right there, the mariachi should have gotten in that truck faster, but that's the danger of shooting one take. I told the man, "You should read the script. You're supposed to be jumping in that truck. You got people chasing you." He was like, "Man, you haven't even shown me the script." So sometimes I'd keep these guys in the dark and it didn't turn out just right, but there's no point in reshooting it. I just ended up editing it a little faster. With that guy right there driving, that's that one guy who'd gotten shot in the alley that time, the guy with a mustache. We shaved his mustache and put a hat and sunglasses on him because he was a nice big guy. We needed some more big bad guys. Watch this guy here on the telephone, this old man here. He looks like he's getting the worst news in the world. And I was setting up for another shot, and I went ahead and grabbed that shot of him just because the expression on his look was really funny. And so I included it in the movie, and it doesn't even belong there. I just included it because I wanted to use everything that I had shot, not waste anything. Funny thing is, Bigoton, the guy with the sunglasses and the heavy mustache that's in the red checkered shirt, he's actually Domino's cousin. We didn't know that until actually we're in a scene together. And that man on their telephone is their uncle. We didn't know that until we were all watching this at a screening. And they said, "Hey, we didn't know you put our uncle in the movie." We said, "Yeah, neither did we." Look at this guy asleep on the left over there. That guy over there, that's a cop. He's supposed to be watching us because we have the real guns. But it was a Sunday. He didn't know they were going to call him in on duty to come watch us, babysit us. So he was hungover after Saturday night. And he was asleep there on the bench, so I went ahead and left him in. Watch the reflection in the guy with the sunglasses. See, what they're looking at down there is a barrel. Because the mariachi I filmed on another day. So Peter's completely confused because... See, he's looking at a barrel right there. I shot mariachi in another day, and Peter was really confused because he didn't know what he was saying. He didn't know who he was looking at. But he was pleased to see that it all worked out in the end because we shot all the scenes in a day and a half, and he didn't know if any of this was going to cut together. He didn't know what was going on. They're driving the mariachi back to town because originally in the script, there was supposed to be a big action scene right here. He was supposed to be held there at the ranch, and he was going to escape. And that's why Domino was going out there to save him. She was going out there to find him. But the camera we had borrowed this, the people we had borrowed this camera from needed it back because they had sold it along with some other 16mm equipment in the production house. So we needed to bring it back in a few days. We thought we'd have it for several weeks, but we had to start cutting some scenes out. So we cut that action scene, and instead of him breaking out of the prison, out of the ranch, they ended up just taking him and dumping him in the street. So it was one of the shortcuts that we had to try and patch up at the last minute because we wanted to make sure there were no loose ends. So that's why he's down laying in the middle of the street. We just went out to the street one cloudy day. Didn't match anything else we shot. And just plopped him in the middle of the street. I got down on the ground and filmed him. Even when the cars were coming, we didn't bother to stop traffic because we wanted a few cars there. I think this insert actually was shot on another... It was another block right there in front of the mariachi's house because there was less traffic. And then this wide shot was shot out on the main street. I think this was a Sunday afternoon, so the traffic was kind of light. You see the cars going in and out of focus because I was trying to focus at the same time. Now, this is a scene I like a lot because, again, they were shot completely separately. The Azul was shot a week before, yet they look like they're looking right at each other and reacting to each other's questions. That was the mariachi's hand right there. And it's just more magic filmmaking. You can do anything you want, fool people into thinking that something's happening when it's not. The way they look at each other, their eye contact, even though they're not looking at anything. It worked really good. It was a lot of fun cutting this together. It just made you realize, you know, the things you can get away with, because that's all movie making is. It's just an illusion. It's just what you create. So you don't have to fly the actors back in to be together. Bring them together in the editing. There he goes, going to drink another full beer. He liked his job. Here's a quick cutaway of the mariachi stumbling around that we shot one day as the sun's dropping right in front of his house. We just grab shots here and there. This is what draws the actors together, makes it look like they're together. The assistant looks off screen, Azul looks off screen, then we cut to Domino. So it makes it seem like they're all in the room together, even though they're all shot separately. Little tricks like that will save you a lot of headaches, just keeping track on what side of the screen they're going to enter and leave from. You'd think that I'd keep real extensive notes on this sort of thing, but I didn't. I just kind of kept it in short-term memory. Like I said, it was a two-week shoot, and there was no crew asking me questions, so I was able to keep this sort of thing in mind, where I had shot them, what angle I had shot them from. And I was surprised to see that it cut together fairly well. It was only a few mistakes that most people would never notice because it moves so fast. Now, this was Domino's first scene, this one here. We had to shoot Azul first again. He was going away to school, studying to be a doctor, Dr. Azul. And so she comes, she didn't know what's going on. All she knows is that when she left was that she was dead, because we kill her off in this scene. So the week that followed, we kept calling her to come back and film her other scenes. She didn't know what we were talking about. She thought she was dead already. I kind of showed you how disoriented all the actors were, because I didn't show them the script. But I was afraid I'd spook them, you know. They'd see how many lines they have, how many scenes they'd have, and they might not show up again. So it was just a day-by-day thing. We'd bring them in, we'd film them very quickly, send them away, and say we needed them for a few more days, and we would call them later. And it worked. Nobody ever ditched us. And this is the Mariachi's ranch. It was it's a small ranch. It looks a lot bigger here than it really is. And we shot Azul and Domino separate from Moco. But what brings them together is this gate right here. The gate opens on them, and then it opens on Moco, kind of tying them together. Other than that, you'll never see a master shot with everybody in it together, because we were all shot separately. These little guys here, you can tell, are not as big or sophisticated as the other bad guys. That guy in the hat right there and the sunglasses, that's Mission Impossible again. This is the third time he's shown up in this movie. It didn't bother us that the bad guys were smaller in this scene too much, because we didn't think anyone was going to see the movie, first of all, to criticize it. And second, I thought it was kind of funny. It seemed like the mariachi had killed off all of Moco's good men, and all he had left were the little vatos. These little guys actually aren't even from this town. They were staying here in the town temporarily. They're from other parts of Mexico, because they're staying at a hotel waiting to be crossed over into the United States. And so we figured before they cross over, might as well make a movie stars. That way they go in as immigrant movie stars. Here's how you make a $7,000 movie. I made this for the video market originally, so I never had a film print, not even a 16mm film print, because that would have cost me another 20 grand. Because as you probably noticed by now, this movie has over 2,000 cuts in it. That's real expensive to conform and then make answer prints and release prints too. Especially on 16, they're always wearing out anyway. Usually what happens is when a distributor buys your movie, they'll pay for the advertising, the 35mm blow-up, the new sound mix, all that, because that's their responsibility. They're the distributor. You don't have to take on those costs. So what I did, and it's accidentally, but looking back, it's a pretty good way to go if you don't have any money. So shoot your movie. Transfer it, your negative, directly to video, but don't cut your negative. Then edit your video copy offline. I mean between two VCRs without anything. You can find someone that has some old Sony 3/4 inch 440s or any kind of tape-to-tape straight cut video editor and cut your movie. And the quality will look beautiful because the image comes straight from your negative and not from a print. Oh, the shot right here. People wonder why I cut away to the motorcycle. It's because I didn't want to put a squib on Domino. Now, Columbia Pictures bought my movie from me. Now, they were going to make a 35mm blow-up with a new sound mix, regardless of whether I'd had it cut on video or if I had a 16mm cut. I'm glad I didn't spend all that money on a 16mm print, because they made a new print anyway. So this is what I'm saying. Show your movie to distributors on video. If they like your movie, they'll pay for the film print themselves. If they don't like it, if no one wants your movie, at least you didn't go to the cost of making a film print to find out that your movie was no good. Spend that money making two more movies. More experience is better than a film print of a bad movie that won't get you any work. Some guy had asked me, how did you make a feature for 7 grand when my short film cost me 5 grand? I said, you made a film print, didn't you? And he said, yeah, I did. Foolish of you, my boy. I just sent out videotapes, and that's why I got people to see my work. But he thought about it a moment, and he said, you know, I don't even show it on film anyway. I show it to people by sending them videotapes of my film print. So, in this day and age, all you really want to do is show a distributor your work. Shoot on film, cut on video. If they like it, they'll make the film prints. That's their job. Don't take on that extra cost yourself. Here comes the mariachi on his makeshift motorcycle. This is a motorcycle we borrowed from his cousin, the same one who gave us the bus. That seat right there, we had a local carpenter make us. It was a seat for the dog, and we told him to use his imagination. So for about 20 bucks, he built us this wooden seat with vacuum cleaner tubes on it and made it look real futuristic and painted it black and so on. It looks like the bat cycle. So this is how you do it. You borrow a camera, an old film camera, or borrow from a friend of yours. Don't buy one, don't rent one, because then you have to pay insurance and all that. You shoot your movie, transfer and edit on video, and use that to show people what you can do. I'm glad I shot an action film because you don't really need many takes of someone running down the street or kicking open a door. And you can you shoot one of these for fairly cheap. And you can have a lot of fun doing it. You know, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of experience. And by being your own crew, it became a great demo tape because when Hollywood saw it, if they only liked the editing, I did that. If they only liked the writing or the directing or the camera work, I did that too. So sometimes when you hand a demo tape in to someone and there's 50 people on your crew, they don't really know what your talent is. That right there was a fake arm. Mariachi got shot. I had the squib embedded in the arm. It was a foam rubber arm. And I had the wires leading up to the camera. I had to detonate it myself because I didn't have any assistants around. It's times like that that I wish I had an assistant because I was trying to start the camera, pop the detonator, and then turn it off so it wouldn't waste too much film because we were shooting in slow motion. And slow motion eats up film because you're running the camera faster. Right here, look at the expression on Moko's face. He wasn't expecting that charge to hit like that. He said, oh shit, right during the rest of that one take, but I cut it out. So making a movie like this with, not necessarily all by yourself, but with a very small crew and with no money is a good way to start off and to learn from, because there is no money. You have to be more creative. You learn how to tell a basic story because there aren't other technical things to distract you. It kind of gets back down to the basic filmmaking techniques because you don't have a lot of money for a lot of extravagant things. The scene right here with a match is something that survived since the first draft of the script, and I'm glad it actually works and actually gets a laugh out of audiences. It's fun and real addictive to get people to laugh in one of something that you've made, and it's what keeps you going through all this, making these movies. It was a real kick to see people get to see the movie at all, much less enjoy it. We thought it would just be hidden away on Spanish video shelf. All three of them. We're going to make three of these movies. And no one would ever see them. But that was fine. The idea was just to learn from it. Watch her lip right here. Boom. See, that's one of the dangers of shooting one take. Now, she had told me that she thought her face had twitched. And I said, no one's going to see this anyway. Don't worry about it. So we didn't shoot a second take. But, I don't know. It keeps you moving. Not too many people noticed, I don't think, although a few people after a festival came up after and said that they thought she was going to open her eyes and come back to life because they saw her face moving. And said, no, sorry, it was just a twitch, you know. Snakes kind of twitch after they're dead also, so. Sorry, Domino. Anyway, this last scene right here was crazy. This was the last day we were going to have the camera, and everything went wrong. We needed to get this shot of the sunset, and it started to rain. You know, the mariachi said, it never rains in this town, and now it's raining on our last day of filming, the day before we have to return the camera. Then we had to drive back out to this 18-mile mark, and the motorcycle wouldn't start. The battery was out, so Mariachi went and charged it. The rain started dying down, so we packed up and we drove out as fast as we can to the 18-mile mark as the sun was dropping. We're watching the sun drop as all this is happening. We get out to the spot. I'd forgotten to bring the metal stuff for his hand, so I just pulled some silver and black gaffer's tape and taped up his hand to make it look like metal. At least we remembered the turtle. But we got all these shots really quickly. This last shot here with his hand, we had forgotten until after we got the shot of him driving away, and by then the sun was already gone. So what I had to do was shoot it at 8 frames per second, because there was no light left. And it gave it that unnatural look. It kind of grabbed the handle a little fast. Now, we never saw any of our dailies until after the 2 weeks, so we didn't know if any of this had come out. Everything came out. The few things that didn't, we cut around, and you would never notice. I'll tell you some funny things about the credits here. I had to conform this film version to my videotape because I didn't have any time code on my video when I cut it, because I never foresaw making a film print. So I had to go to Columbia Pictures after they bought the movie and not oversee the movie cut, just cut the movie because there were no slates, no other editor could do it. I had to sit there and do it myself, which was fine because the shots were all over the place. Now I was kind of embarrassed about the whole state of my film. So look at this, additional editing by Robert Rodriguez. See, I had included the name of two other people who were overseeing the editing, and the studio wouldn't let me include their names because they worked there at the studio. So they took their names off but didn't take mine off. So it says edited by Robert Rodriguez and additional editing by Robert Rodriguez, if that makes any sense. Up there in the credits you saw Dolly Gripps. Those are the people who pushed me in the wheelchair. It says assistant to producer. That was the lady that cleaned Carlos's house, the mariachi's house. So we put her up there because they gave us a form to fill out on the credits. And the special thanks, these are the people in the town who helped us out, the policemen, the people who lent us the different locations. Alfonso's name is there for the bathtub. Andrea and Nora, those are my two nieces. I put them in there because they make me laugh. Since this was a negative pickup, you can do stuff like that. But in a real studio picture, they're very picky about what you put in the credits. So I was lucky I could get away with things here. Thanks for joining me, and I hope you had a good time. And I hope this inspires people to go out and make their own movies. And if for any reason you want more information, there will be a book about the making of El Mariachi later. The best thing about seeing this Columbia Pictures logo on this movie is for Carlos and I, our first imaginary company when we made our video home movies was called Columbia Pictures. So for us, it's great to see our first feature film being released by the real Columbia. Thank you.